the fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Eat your breakfast oatmeal with a pinch of cinnamon, a dash of brown sugar, and a crapload of opinions. This is Brady and Lang in the morning on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Down low, Yager, first man back. Yager centered it. Bergeron scores! Patrice Bergeron from the bottom of the left circle on the power play to make it 2-0.
Bruins 2, Blackhawks no score. Boston now leads the series 2-1. Three things we'll get to before 7:15 this morning on Brady Lang. Well, a set of tickets could be yours courtesy of Dom's Place for Blue Jays Rockies tomorrow night. Two big hockey items. The Flyers with a Mark Streit contract extension. It probably means no more Daniel Briere and no more Ilya Bryzgalov. I hope Ed Snyder likes writing checks. He does, actually. This because it's confirmed. And, of course, the Blue Jays with a sixth straight victory that we'll get to. Loads of great starting pitching in the last five outings especially. We'll get to that. But first, we begin with Boston up 2-1 in the series. Up 2-0 last night. They never wavered. Chicago didn't really have a second or third wave of attack because they didn't have a first wave. Shots a little bit deceiving. The balance of play, all Boston. Face-offs, all Boston. And the Bruins now, I don't know, can you call a decisive 2-1 lead? They've only scored two more goals than Chicago in the series. But it feels like now, two more home games out of the next four, it's their series to lose.
They've definitely carried the play the last five periods of regulation time and the overtime period. So if you look at it in that context, Greg, it has been decisive. From that first period of game two on, it's been Boston.
I definitely feel like it's the Bruins' series to lose. And I don't know if you can talk about Claude Julien out-coaching a Joel Quenneville three games into a series, but you just get the sense that Boston has come up with the answers to whatever Chicago has thrown at them. The Blackhawks win game one of the series, and Boston just seems to get better as the series wears on. Even though it's only these three games in, you look at game two, they don't have a lot of shots, but they capitalize on the chances they do get. And then last night was a dominating performance by the Bruins. It really was.
And this home advantage now for Chicago, or Boston, 8-2 at home. The games they've lost, game two to the Leafs, game five to the Leafs. That's the list. They have not lost a home game in the playoffs since early May. And now we're almost to late June.
And Tuukka Rask has not allowed a goal at home in the last 166 minutes and counting. And if the Blackhawks can't get that power play going for game four, it could go a while longer.
Does it help that the Blackhawks have faced adversity? They faced adversity big time, like Boston did. I mean, facing it against a Detroit team that has a Pavel Datsyuk, has a Henrik Zetterberg. Jimmy Howard played well in that series. I don't think there's any way around it. Howard took a step up to where you'd say if he's not an elite goalie, he's not going to write on that with a terrible defense in front of him. Or does it not make a difference? This isn't Detroit. This is Boston. I mean, you're not talking Jonathan Erickson and Carlo Koliakovo out there. You're talking about Zdeno Chara and company.
That you just answer your question. That's it.
Sorry
in a
to
nutshell.
Do that.
It's because the fact that the Bruins' blue line is so deep and so disciplined and so tough that they're not going to allow chances like Detroit did. And Detroit allowed all those chances, and Jimmy Howard bailed them out time and time again to keep that series going.
And even Tuukka Rask is a step up from Jimmy Howard here, too, when you're looking at it that way.
And even think about this. I mean, they went through a scoring slump in Detroit, and we all wondered, where is Taves? Where is Kane? And it was actually, they scored 10 goals in the last three games in the series against the Red Wings. But where were a lot of them from? Bickle, Shaw, Hossa, who didn't play last night, obviously, that we'll get to in a sec. But they went through a two-goal, 11-period drought, scoring just two in the 11 periods from the end of game one in that series all the way through games two, three, and four when they lost three straight. And they look like they're kind of swirling the drain right now in terms of not being able to get a goal from the guys they count on in the regular season to give them the best record in hockey.
Doug McLean talked about it on Hockey Central. He talked about a post-game last night with Menard and Kiprios. It's time for Quenneville to make a super line, put Kane and Taves together, and play the crap out of them just to get them going.
Just feels like that's too easy to check, though. Boston's not. I mean, Boston's going to know you're doing that. I know they have to try something. I'm not against the idea.
Because Carlisle figured out a way to get Kessel away from Chara, even on the road in Boston.
He did.
And that's something Quenneville has to look at the tape of what Carlisle did and say, well, how did they do it? How did they juggle their lines to the point where even on the road, I could get 5 or 6 minutes of quality time away from the toughest D-man
well,
in the league?
And not in game one, he didn't. But they he did in game two, and they won. He did in game five, and they won. And they led 4-1 in game seven. So not a bad track record. I know there's angst maybe from the Leafs thinking, you know, the team we had absolutely dead and buried is two games away from winning the Stanley Cup. But this just isn't Boston. Everything's gotten better. Everything's gotten tighter. The injuries Boston suffered, they missed Ferentz, and he wasn't healthy the rest of the series. Redden was a factor in the first few games of that series. We hadn't even seen Torrey Krug at that point in time off the blue line, who came in and was excellent in the Rangers and Pittsburgh series.
And at that point, we hadn't seen the Dan Pae-Tyler Seguin combination in the third line.
That's true. Pae was only playing with Gregory Campbell and Sean Thornton. Yeah.
And that is, Pae's done wonders to Seguin the last couple games.
Well, and is that then by accident? Because Campbell gets hurt, right? He's out with the broken leg, and all of a sudden you find this magical combination for the Boston Bruins, but no doubt it's been great to see that depth.
I don't know that we're shocked at the fact the Blue Jays have won six straight, had a chance to obviously win seven straight with Esmail Rogers on the hill against Jeff Francis. He of the near six ERA tonight. Blue Jays can get within two games of 500, a 2-0 win last night. And we mentioned it, just three, you know, two singles and a double. And they win the game thanks to seven shutout innings from Josh Johnson. Brett Cecil was good. Casey Jansen got the save. But maybe we're surprised as to how they're doing it with the starting pitching seemingly in shambles, right? 3 or 4 weeks ago. I mean, you're going waiver wire scrap heap, given Esmail Rogers opportunities he wasn't getting anywhere else. Wither Ramon Ortiz. I mean, they needed him to give a couple good starts. Next thing you know, it looked like his arm had fallen off. And you're like, well, we were counting on good outings from Ramon Ortiz, but adding Wong to the rotation, getting Johnson back healthy. Like I said, if you thought the Blue Jays 3 weeks ago were capable of winning six straight, Jim and Mike, wouldn't you say, well, there'll be some 10-8 games, 8-5, 9-7 in 13 innings. What you aren't expecting is holding in the teams they've played, Texas and the Rockies, to four runs in five games.
And the formula they've done it is the formula they thought was going to be the beginning of the season. Starting pitching, giving them quality innings, 6-7 innings deep, game after game during the streak. A fresh bullpen coming in and allowed to be configured by John Gibbons the way he wants it. Not because of desperation that, well, you're the arm that's the least tired. I got to put you in there. And now you have a case where, you know, Brett Cecil hasn't allowed a run, or he's only allowed two hits his last 14 outings. Because he's fresh, and Casey Jansen comes in and he slams the door because they have options and they have rest.
Brett Cecil's been just such a great find for this bullpen. A lot of people were talking earlier, we got to get him back into that starting rotation, but he's been just terrific in the role that he's been cast this season.
I think Blue Jays fans deserve a lot of credit, so I don't do this begrudgingly. I think there's great logic and calculation and reason about where they're at. They'll play their 70th game tonight. They're either going to be 34-36 or 33-37. But despite some buying in too deep on the hype, I just think the first 40, 50 games or so, nice bucket of cold water to the face, and there's logic here. I don't think anyone's getting too excited. I don't think anyone's doing handstands saying, I told you so. I don't think the people that were saying it was too early to count them out are, again, They want so badly to yell at everybody and say, see, we told you it was too early. But it's still too early to play the, hey, you said it was too early card. It's too early in this renaissance, if you will, for the Blue Jays. They'll do it if they end up, you know, winning 12 of the next 14 and they're sitting 45-38 at the All-Star break. But there's 10 divisional games coming up after Wednesday. 10. Boston, Baltimore, Tampa. All teams, maybe with the exception of the Red Sox. All teams you either got to catch or you got to pass. You got to pass two of them.
And that's it in a nutshell. You have to wait to see how they fare against those divisional rivals in those crucial games with seven of them on the road. If they're successful in those series and win those series on the road, then you can take a long, hard look at and reevaluate where the team is at and maybe toss out a few I told you so's. But wait until we see what happens then.
And you can't follow up this six-game winning streak with even a four-game skid, because 6-4 is 600 ball, and as we've documented, that's not going to even be enough. Like, you got to keep that in mind. This team's got to play, what, 630-ish baseball the rest of the way? Exactly. That's how deep the hole was.
But I think people can they can create these straw man arguments and overdo it on, well, these aren't as important wins, Texas and Colorado, as if you beat Baltimore and Tampa. They all count the same. If the other teams, Boston plays Tampa the next three games, someone will win and someone will lose. That much I know. So the Blue Jays can either keep pace with somebody or gain a game on somebody. And doing a little bit of advance poking around at the schedule, I'm telling you, August right now shapes up as a month. I think the Blue Jays could make a huge push. I don't want to lay this out too much, but they've 7 games to start. They're all West Coast. And you might think, well, that's lousy. But they're against the Angels and they're against Seattle. Who knows what kind of state the Angels will be in right now? Their time to win 6 straight is now, right? Well, I'm going Herb Brooks on them. Their time is now. They have to do it in the next 2 weeks because the Blue Jays are doing it.
Well, the Angels have sent some players packing, realizing this season's a complete write-off, and they're going to ship some guys out and hit the restart button. What kind of Angels team will – kind of lineup are you going to face by the time you face them in August?
Pujols for Bonifacio. Anybody in? You may not want that contract, right? But then they go to Seattle, then home games against Oakland, Boston. Those aren't easy. But look, they still are owed these games against the Astros. And I know the Astros have been a little bit pluckier than maybe people thought. You still get 7 games against them. And a lot of the AL East teams have used those games up. You still have games against Kansas City. In September, you have games against, the Diamondbacks and the Twins. And, there's just room to make up ground. Everybody knows there is.
Yeah, just keep this going. This formula of starting pitching, going deep, a fresh bullpen, timely hitting. This is what you thought you would see from the Blue Jays of 2013. The longer it goes, the better.
All right, so Flyers signed Mark Streit yesterday, as we told you a few weeks ago, and you heard. They picked up his rights. Didn't take long to get a 4-year contract done. It's in the $5.25 million range a season. And you say to yourself, how can the Flyers afford this? Talk that they will amnesty both Ilya Brizgalov, who's a bunch of years left on his deal, and maybe more intriguingly to other teams, Daniel Briere. And you wouldn't sign Daniel Briere to a long-term, huge contract like the Flyers did several years ago. But I'm sure he's going to draw. It's the best of both worlds for Briere, who's had a good run in Philadelphia. Wasn't very good his first year there, but has been pretty solid when he's been healthy. It's cheap in the next 2 years. I'm surprised they're doing it, but his cap hit's outrageous. It's 6.5. They paid him a ton of money up front, and for a 34-year-old player, it's got good value for a team that might think he's the missing piece in the offseason.
Well, this is something Dave Nonis has to really explore. With 109 points in 108 playoff games, his respect around the league, the kind of leadership he brings, I think it was sorely lacking in the Leafs bench in that third period collapse against the Bruins.
Then I think a winger's got to go. That's a tough one because you've already added Van Riemsdyk. You've got, think about their wingers. Kuhlman, Van Riemsdyk, Kessel, Leupel. You don't bring Briere in to play on the third line, and he's not going to want to play on the third line.
Well, I'd easily get rid of Kuhlman to make room for Briere.
I would not do that. That's me. This guy's 8 years younger, 9 years younger than.
Younger,
I like
smarter.
Young. No, not younger, smarter.
I like proven playoff performers and guys that can take you to the next level.
Yeah, you can't make it.
Briere's going to be a better fit than Kuhlman.
You can't bring in a bunch of guys that are ready to date the Golden Girls, okay? How many of these guys you want?
It's not like he's out of shape.
Do you want to add Ryan Smith and Shane Doan with him? You can play him on the three Billy Goats line?
That's a lot of faith, though, in Kuhlman after 2 down seasons, though.
He's not on a walker going to the ring.
Awful lot of faith. All right. We want you to name, we know Walt Weiss, current manager for the Colorado Rockies. We can send you to Blue Jays Rockies if you can name 2 of the first 3 managers for the Colorado Rockies in their existence. 2 of the first 3. The tickets are brought to you by Tom's Place, 190 Baldwin Street in Kensington Market. 2 of the first 3 Rockies managers, 416-870-0590, *590, 888-666-0590. And you're off to tomorrow night's game. Just a hint, one of the managers, he's my all-time favorite manager. All right. 716, Eric Francis from Out West next for V-Lux Skylights. And more on the NBA trade that may see the LA Clippers that much closer to being in next year's NBA Finals. It's Brady and Lang.
Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
And we're playing our best hockey of the season right now, and that's what you got to do to give yourself a chance to win a Stanley Cup. And we got to continue playing our best hockey, and at the same time, we got to continue to try and fix the little things that we feel can be better in our game.
Claude Julien, head coach of the Boston Bruins. You know him, you love him. Bruins 2, Blackhawks no score. They lead the series 2-1. We'll get to that with Eric Francis in a little bit. Congratulations to Don in Pickering. He ends up winning Blue Jays Rockies tickets courtesy of Tom's Place. He knew two of the first three managers. Don Baylor out of the gate in 93 for the Rockies when they played at Mile High Stadium. Stuck around 6 years. Jim Leland, little smoking a donut with the Rockies in 99. 72-90. They fired him after 1 year. Should have been a lesson for the Tigers.
Great things with Detroit,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, with all that, with the best player in the world and the best pitcher in the world. And they, yeah, can barely win the division every year. That's awesome. And then Buddy Bell was the third manager between 2000 and 2003. Now, quick before we get to Eric, KHL, they put this announcement out yesterday. For the Olympics coming up in Sochi, they will shut down. The league will shut down, not just during the Olympics, okay, but for 2 weeks prior to the Olympics. This is serious business. This is probably coming right down from Vladimir Putin and his Bob Kraft Super Bowl ring. This is coming right down. This is like Jor-El and Superman. He is laying down the hammer saying, we're going to be ready and fresh and prompt. We're talking practice. We're going to practice before the Olympics, unlike Canada and the U.S., right?
Well, I was just going to say, is Putin going to confiscate all the passports for the players so they can't go to, like, the south of France for the month?
Well, the players party. Not on the Olympic teams can, but, you know, God forbid, you know, if you're a big Akbar's Kazan fan, you don't get, you know, if you're a mini pack holder, you don't get to see your team for a whole month.
But for the locomotive players, how out of shape are they going to be after a month off before they come back for that KHL big Saturday night tilt in Magnitogorsk?
Yeah, he sent a text to your wife. Honey, listen, those Tractor Chelyabinsk tickets, you know, we can go away in February. They're not playing at all. So we can go to, like, Siberia. 726, Eric Francis, our guest, Sportsnet West, and, of course, the Calgary Sun. Doesn't that make you want to pick Russia now? Not only knowing they're going to be off for 2 weeks, but Ilya Brizgalov will have a new home. He'll be super confident. They'll throw him in the nets. He knows he's risking execution if they don't win the gold medal, right?
Incentives are so important in today's sports world. Yeah, that's a... But how many guys from the KHL are going to make up the Russian roster? Half?
Five? Yeah, maybe more than that, right? Maybe seven or eight?
Yeah, you don't have that many Russians in the NHL that much anymore. So, yeah, interesting. Yeah, makes sense. Maybe the NHL should have done the same thing for the North American team.
Gary Bettman would make that. He'd grit his teeth more than, and, you know, announcing potential relocation in Seattle. What do you make of that? We were talking about Quebec last week, and now we're deep in on Seattle and the idea that the Coyotes will play at Key West Arena in front of 11,000 strong, we assume, next year. It looks like a lot closer to reality than a week ago.
Well, you know, and especially you see that, you know, they've got the arena. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
It's not the long-term solution, but there's a short-term solution. In Quebec, you just don't have that, right? I mean, I know they have... what they have in Quebec, but I just think Seattle, you know, they also want to keep a team in the West, and that's important too. They've done some market research on what Seattle can offer, and I think it could be a pretty good hockey town. I don't know, that said, Quebec would be an incredible hockey town, and Quebec will ultimately get a National Hockey League team. I think it's more a case of them waiting for that arena to be built, and then there's absolutely no reason why your next, you know, on top of your list wouldn't be Quebec City. It's a no-brainer.
Eric, how late can the league push releasing the schedule and knowing who is actually going to play where before they have to have a decision made?
Guys, how long is a piece of string? I mean, we've been through this a million times, right? And every time the league will say, "Yeah, no, we can wait, you know, 6 more weeks. No, we can only wait 4 more weeks. No, we can only wait 2 more weeks," and then nothing changes. So you want me to put my money somewhere right now? I'll say that the team is still in Phoenix next year. That's the end of that story.
Well, and for a league that basically put out its NHL awards on Pinterest last week, I don't know what to say about it.
There's a quandary, though, right? I mean, that award show.
I know
awesome,
you don't want a
right?
show, but the NFL doesn't have a show. Major League Baseball doesn't have a show. Why does the NHL have to have a show? You're right.
Well, it's in the, that's in their contract that all the Mucky Mucks get to go to Vegas, right? Everybody wants an excuse to go to Vegas, right? Sorry, honey, I have to go to Vegas for work. It's the ultimate situation.
And journalists have to cover it. You know, esteemed journalists like yourself have to be. You got to see the lady being presented in person.
Exactly,
right?
Because the people have the right to know too. People need to know exactly the ins and outs of why the lady being was won.
The Jennings Trophy. Eric Francis joining Sportsnet West Calgary said Boston was dominant last night. Chicago, you know, it's not, you can't count them out, I suppose, but this ain't exactly the Detroit Red Wings blue line and a two-star forward unit in Datsyuk and Zetterberg they got to come back on. I know it's not 3-1 yet. 3-1 probably finishes it, and we're now wondering if it's only five or six games, but their best players have to play better in Game 4.
Yeah, Kane has been awful, you know, throughout the playoffs. I know he had that two-game binge where he got four goals, but come on, I mean, he's been awful, and he's supposed to be their best player. I mean, Taze, I know, is their best all-around player, and he's been contributing in some ways, but they need goals from him as well. With the ice time he gets, it's insane. I mean, I hate to question Joel Quenneville because he's been brilliant, and he is brilliant, but, you know, I also question them separating Kane and Taze. I just think that those guys for so many years have been playing so well together, and to keep them separated for the most part throughout this entire series is a head-scratcher to me. But, hey, he's a lot smarter than I am. I think Claude Julien said it best in that clip you guys just aired. They're playing their best hockey of the year. They've clearly, you know, ramped up their game and peaked, you know, certainly after the Leafs series. And that's what you need to win a cup, and that's what Julien said. Look at Chicago. I mean, no one could question whether or not they peaked at the beginning of the season. And they played brilliant all year long. Don't get me wrong. They're the President's Cup winners. But, you know, they certainly aren't playing their best hockey right now. And that's mostly due to the fact that the Bees just – the Bruins have them figured out. The Bruins have everybody figured out. I mean, they're just playing incredible hockey right now. There's no weakness.
But, Eric, you're not the first person to suggest that Quenneville should reunite Kane and Taves. Is this just a matter of Chara's so into the head of the Blackhawks that they're afraid to put them together?
Yeah, I think they figure if they've got all those, both those eggs in one basket, you know, the combination of Chara and or, you know, Bergeron can easily key on those guys. So they want to keep them separate, especially, I guess, when they play in Boston, because Boston gets last change. To me, nothing else seems to be working. So why not go with something that's worked for years and years together and take your chances? Hey, they still have some pretty good secondary, scoring. They should have some good secondary scoring in Chicago. They've had it all year long until this series. But, man, Hossa going down in the warm-up last night, that hurts them tremendously, especially when they're trying to find goals. That's their most dangerous player right now.
Eric Francis joining us for VLUX, Skylights, Calgary Sun, and Sportsnet West. Sounds like, July 5th free agency starts, but there's the amnesty buyout period. And even with the Flyers noting yesterday, most people expecting Briere and Brizgalov out. We expect Komisarek here, even though he's only got the 2 years left. The Alberta teams might be, I mean, we're going to have a huge window, bigger than anything we've ever seen in terms of amnesty buyouts in the NHL, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's going to be plenty of movement. It's going to make things interesting for fans because, you know, with every buyout, it means an opportunity for somebody else. Like, Brizgalov may be the exception, but pretty much everybody else will find a home somewhere else at a greatly reduced price. And so that opens up some opportunities for teams, and that's kind of exciting. Teams that you wouldn't normally think have a chance at picking up a significant name or in free agency, whatever, what have you.
Is there an obvious Flames candidate? I mean, I know Stajan's been discussed. I don't think, you know, you're still looking to see more from Hudler, but he's going to stay for the time being. Anybody you look at?
To me, Alex Tanguay is the obvious guy. You got three more years on a deal for him. You pay him quite a lot of money, and you signed him so that he could bolster Jerome McGinley's stock. And now that Jerome's gone, and you know Alex is not too happy about being left, you know, on an island here, you know, with no one to pass to, really. And so he's a possibility. But Jay Feaster went on record Friday saying we will buy out no one. So you know, I guess I have to take him at his word. Now, you know, we have this interesting development over the last.
I was going to ask about Brendan Shanahan. I'm going to make
Ken King finally came out yesterday, and he was telling me that you know they have talked to Brendan Shanahan. I don't think anybody doubted that, but they had dinner together last Friday. Talking about the hockey ops position, that they've never really had one here. You know, he says he's working with Jay Feaster very closely. This is not a death watch on Jay Feaster. This is he's working with Jay Feaster and some other people in the organization to find someone who may head up the hockey operations. And I don't think it's a bad thing. It's good news for Flames fans because if they're willing to, as an ownership group, to pour more money and resources into bolstering the hockey department and getting bigger brains in there for, you know, all their decision-making processes. That's a good thing, too. And another thing that's interesting today, guys, is that the talk that Logan Couture has signed an extension in San Jose. That's a fascinating situation. You look at their roster right now, guys, Thornton, Marlowe, Pavelski, Boyle, the absolute cornerstones of that franchise, all have just 1 year left on their contracts. All will walk as UFAs after next year, theoretically, if they want to. So to have Coach Couture in place, who's their best player now and their cornerstone moving forward, that's very important for that franchise.
Eric, thanks for this. We'll talk on Friday.
Cheers, boys.
Eric Francis will join us on Friday after, Wednesday's game four, but we'll get even more into the stuff on the weekend. Now, NBA game six goes tonight. Ratings haven't been good. Not at all. 11.4 overnight rating. Down 10% from Game 5 in 2012 and even 2011 in what was kind of, boring series in retrospect. I think this one's been much better. But I guess the drama was LeBron, Bosch, and Wade in the final for the first time and not getting it done. But I'm shocked. Is this just San Antonio? How does Oklahoma City isn't a bigger market and they don't have, you know, any... I guess they're a slightly sexier team with Durant. I'm shocked by the numbers being really low.
The 9 p.m. start time doesn't help either. With the majority of your audience in the Eastern time zone, that's awfully late if you have kids.
But you're getting West, though. Like, I get not starting West games at 4:30, right?
But on a weeknight, if you have some kids who are really into basketball, basically they can watch the first half, and even that, pushing it for their bedtime for school the next day. And there's this obsession. We have to cater to the entire time zones. But 9 o'clock, you don't start right at 9 with the intros and anthems. It's getting kind of late when you have the tip-off.
SportsMediaWatch.com blames Father's Day, but why do they have the U.S. Open on Father's Day? They think that's people will watch golf. You'll sit around with your dad, with your son, whatever, and watch. And U.S. Open was only down marginally from last year. It was actually up from 2011. So.
And the game on Father's Day actually started at an hour earlier than the other games. I think it was an 8 p.m. tip-off as opposed to 9 o'clock.
Yeah, it can trick you that way. Coming up, Chris Daniels, reporter from King 5 TV in Seattle. How hot are the coals for a move for the Coyotes to the Pacific Northwest? And more on the Blue Jays. Bit of a rotation scramble when Brandon Morrow comes back. Isn't there? Or is there? We'll discuss it.
Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's been a complicated process. We in our minds, understand that we're dealing with a time frame, but a specific day isn't going to do it. But time is getting short, and as Bill said, this is really going to be a decision that the city of Glendale is going to have to make.
It's basically margin call in Phoenix. It's like at Trading Places at the end with Duke and Duke on the floor.
That didn't go well, did it?
Randolph and Mortimer. No, hell no. And there was even, now I don't know who had the heart attack, Randolph or Mortimer.
You're a dead man!
Mortimer.
It was the Ralph Bellamy character, the Don Amici basically saying, the hell with him. So anyway, that's where it's at in Phoenix, although it has nothing to do with the orange crop or Winthorpe, Valentine, Lionel Joseph from the African Education Conference. None of that stuff. Okay, yeah, none of it. Chris Daniels is a reporter for King 5 Television in Seattle. NHL to Seattle may be coming back. Chris is kind enough to get up super early and join us. Chris, this obviously has legs. Loads of people talking about it. But it's been talked about in Seattle probably for longer than that. It feels a lot more real, I would gather, in the last week or so, does it?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard the rumblings now for 4 or 5 weeks that despite what happened with the NBA, that the NHL coming to Seattle in soon was not over, that there'd still been some talks. I think what, though, in the last 48 to 72 hours that we've heard seems a little bit out of the blue. There'd be a lot of work that would need to be done in a short amount of time, so I think fairly, there are a lot of skeptics in the Seattle area about whether this can be pulled off in such a short amount of time.
Are there any skeptics, Chris, in Seattle City Council? How much opposition would the mayor get to this kind of plan?
There wouldn't be much opposition as far as the council and the mayor are concerned. They were the ones last year who put together and worked with Chris Hansen, who wants to be an NBA team owner, on a new memorandum of understanding, essentially a deal to build a new arena in Seattle. They've been going through the environmental process since. That was signed way back in October last year, and that would be an arena that would host an NBA an NHL team. And this is where it gets tricky when you talk about the NHL is the language within that document says that Chris Hansen's group would need to acquire an NBA team first to begin construction of that arena for the groundbreaking. So there might need to be some reworking of the language if an NHL team can be acquired first in order to start that arena. But what the mayor has indicated is that he believes that this wouldn't prevent the NHL from coming here, that they're ready and they can talk about the MOU if an NHL team does decide to move to Key Arena. And the council members approved this deal as well. Overwhelmingly back in October, both the city and the county council, King County here. So there is support there amongst elected leaders for this.
Chris Daniels, kind enough to join us, a reporter from King 5 TV in Seattle. You can follow him on Twitter, Chris Daniels 5 on Twitter. Tell us about Key Arena. I mean, Jim and I have both been to older, dilapidated arenas. How is Key Arena? It's over a half century old. Can it accommodate, or is there a ton of work that would need to be done to a venue that obviously hasn't hosted a team from the Big Four leagues in a few years now?
I'll tell you this. It's a great basketball facility to this day. The Sonics moved out back in 2008. It is, as you alluded to, the Seattle Center Coliseum, dating back to the World's Fair of 1962. It was renovated back in the mid-90s for the Sonics. Seats about 14, 15 for basketball. For hockey, it is not a great facility.
Yeah.
The way the rink was put in and the support beams for the building, it would only seat 11,000, and there's a substantial amount of obstructed view seats. Essentially, the rink goes all the way to the one end of the arena. If you've seen the new layout for the Barclays Center, with the Islanders, where the rink is pushed up. It's been done in other cities as well, America West down in Phoenix. It makes the sight lines really tough. That's a big reason why the minor league Thunderbirds here, the Western Hockey League team, moved out also at the end of 2008 and into 2009 is because those sight lines were just so bad and it wasn't a great fan experience. So any team that would have to come in just about 3 months' time would have to work on the locker rooms, work on those sight lines, try and spruce it up a bit. You know, there's been talk about upgrading the scoreboard and some of the electronics inside the building, but it would indeed only be a short-term home. And, you know, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly over time, over the last couple of years, have said they believe it will work as a short-term home if a group ever wanted to come forward and buy a team and bring it to Seattle temporarily. But there would have to be some assurances that indeed this building that is going through an environmental review, the new hockey arena would be going forward, I would think, for the NHL to want to commit to this because the team would lose a tremendous amount of money out of the gate with just 11,000 seats.
Well, Chris, the passion, dedication of Seahawks fans is well known throughout North America. How much appetite and passion is there for NHL hockey in Seattle?
A fair amount. I mean, there's a large adult league here that kind of touts itself as one of the largest in North America. There are two minor league Western Hockey League teams that play both about a half hour out of the city of Seattle up in Everett and down in Kent, Washington. So they get about 5,000 to 6,000, 5,000 to 8,000 a game. So if you combine those two fan bases and then the people that commute up to Vancouver to see Canucks games. There's a fair amount of fans that live in Northwest Washington and Southwest BC that can't get into Canucks games that, you know, I've heard in the past the NHL and others believe would commute to see this team if there was a team here in Seattle. So there is a built-in fan base for hockey. I think, you know, there are questions about how it would compete against other sports, especially if the NBA came in around the same time, but there is a belief here by many in the hockey community that it would be a success, especially out of the gate.
And the hockey people I you know talked to about this have duly noted the great success that the MLS team has had. You know, we expected it to work here in Toronto. The team hasn't been very good, but the Sounders have been. I don't think you can put into words what a resounding success it's been. in a market that people weren't sure of. Now you got a team. There's a team in Portland the last few years. Great rivalry. Now Vancouver, but it's been an incredible success the Sounders have in Seattle, and I think that bodes well if you're looking at it from an NHL perspective.
You know, I think you know Gary Bettman's been very careful on his wording throughout this process with the Phoenix Coyotes. He did say a couple of months ago, back in April, in an interview when he was announcing the Winter Classic, that Seattle would be a great hockey market and there'd be quite a rivalry with Vancouver. And to your point, perhaps that's a factor, looking at what the MLS has done here in the Northwest and a tremendous rivalry. It's really a bubble with soccer in North America with what Vancouver, Seattle, and Portland have in a short amount of time in terms of the fan bases. It is a sport that came in here really unpoisoned. The NBA really was poisonous 5 years ago, and there's a question of whether all the fans would come back when a team comes back. If the NHL was to come in here, not only do you have the built-in fan base that I discussed, but you have a sport that's not poisoned, where people aren't angry at the commissioner and angry at team owners. And boy, if you market it right, based on what we've seen with the Sounders, it could be a tremendous success. And that's the big if, is they would have only a few months to build up to a team coming here. And you know, if you do it right, Seattle has shown that they're willing to support it.
Chris Daniels, some valuable insight from King 5 TV in Seattle. Seattle looking potentially to get back in the NHL after an absence of nearly 90 years. Yeah, last year for the Seattle Metropolitans in the NHL, 1922. So if there's any living fans, maybe we can get them to the first game, right?
Wasn't it the same thing with the Ottawa Senators back in the day? Did they have any fans still alive from their previous incarnation when they came into the league?
None that could pen, write a letter and convince us at that point. Although, what was it? The guy in Japan, oldest living person, died at like 115. Last week.
That's amazing. Wow. Yeah, for sure. So
yeah, it's unusual, Jim. Yeah, that's to live that long. Well, that's why he's the oldest ever.
That's what I'm saying. It's 115. I can't say it's amazing.
What's amazing?
I'm 80? Planning on going for $120.
Farwell, give me your year. When do you kick? When do you kick the bucket?
I'm going Gilmore, 93.
Oh, God. I don't want to live. Who the hell would want to live that long?
I've always wanted to live till I'm 100.
Just 84. Has to be a number in the 80s for me.
Shot
84. Come on. How about 70?
No, 93.
You live a really full life the next 23 years. You could have a lot of fun.
I'm going to still be paying off my kids' bills.
How about some heli-skiing, some hang gliding? By the way, World Cup next summer. We'll be in the midst of it 12 months from now. And now we have a third nation out of 32 qualifying. Brazil was already in because they get to host it. Japan was in because they're Japan. And Australia... Just now, it's Wednesday or it's Tuesday night, late night Tuesday night right now in Australia, and 80,000 strong in Sydney just witnessed Australia beat, as the Miss Teen South Carolina calls it, the Iraq. 1-0 Australia beats the Iraq to qualify for the World Cup next year. This will be the third straight year. They qualified. They were out of the World Cup between 1978 and 2002. But the Socceroos are back, baby.
Are you taking a road trip to Brazil take any of this?
I'm trying to talk. I got to do a lot around the house to make that happen.
Your honey-do list with Mrs. Brady, you go to Brazil, would last until you're 70.
It would shoot through the stratosphere, I think. But, yeah, Australia will go. Now, I will say this. Guess what nationality the referee was in the Australia-Iraq match?
French.
Canadian.
He was Iranian. Those two nations hate each other. Like, if I'm an Iraqi midfielder, am I going to get it's like Danny Davis doing the British Bulldogs matches. Am I going to get a fair shake?
Not a chance.
An Iranian? I mean, Fabro, you tweet the Iron Sheik sometimes. Get him to weigh in on this. I know he's like as American as it gets now. That guy's probably having lunch at, Jack in the Box this morning or Sonic.
Now, find
out what he thinks about an Iranian referee. Although this guy's got to be better than Don Van Massenhoven. Has to be.
Now, come on.
Forget about Strathroy. Honest to God.
Not that bad?
Has to be.
that's what we're going for.
Yes. He's slightly less an amazing referee than it is amazing to live to 115.
Right.
8 o'clock update. Don't bang your fist on the table.
People can't hear something now.
No, you can't. John Morosi next. More with Evander Kane from the Winnipeg Jets with us as well. And to trade or not to trade... Josh Johnson Well, you know you can listen to him. 11:40, Baseball Central, Josh Johnson with Jeff Blair and Dirk Hayhurst. What's that I smell? Great radio chemistry.